Hello, this is Paulette Jackson, the host of the Foreign Letter Rejection Theater podcast, and you're listening to episode 37 of Murder at Abaddon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Abaddon Hill, the Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Okay, everybody, we're going without notes. Just going to try to do the intro, and I'm going to keep it short because I want to get into this chapter. Welcome to episode 37. Of Murder at Abaddon Hill. I'm P.G. Holyfield. Thanks to the guest voices today, we've got Ray Lamond returning as Lila. As always, we've got Rick Stringer from Variant Frequencies doing the chapter intro. Thanks to Podcasting's Rich Siegfried returning once more as Herjar, the blacksmith. We've got the contest going on over at murderatabaddonhill.com, pgholyfield.com. If you leave a review over at iTunes, if you rate Murder at Abaddon Hill over at patiobooks.com, or you call the Cairn line at 704-315-5884, please send me an email letting me know you did one, two, or all three of those things, and you'll qualify for the contest. The contest ends on December 20th, and I'll do the drawing on December 21st. Also, check out the new crew page over at the website for the assistant producers. And I want you to check out their work in addition to the wonderful work they're doing now editing my audio so that I can get this podcast out in a more timely manner. Thanks, guys. Lastly, I want to thank Nathan Lowell for the Story So Far segment that you'll be hearing in the next couple seconds. Nathan is one of the most prolific authors that I have the pleasure of getting to know because of podcasting. His share novels over at Patio Books are great listens. Check them out if you haven't. And thanks again, Nathan, for doing that for me. Okay, let's get into it. Stay tuned after the chapter for some Caroline calls and some more info about some things I'm doing with Patrick McLean. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Nathan Lowell, creator of The Golden Age of the Solar Clipper. You can find my books as free podcast downloads on iTunes and at patiobooks.com. But you didn't come here to listen to me. This is the story so far. No matter what they do, Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee remain several steps behind Greta Platt's murderer. Gloria Platt has been killed. Talik Boer is dead. Lane Nichols has escaped with Father Joris nipping at her heels. And while this has been going on, Marissa is nearing completion of a potion that might save Edvard Avedon or create a threat more powerful than anyone is willing to admit. In Chapter 36, Aramis finds that Father Joris has returned to Avedon Hill. The retired cleric may have lost Lane's scent, but a discussion with Aramis gives Joris a reason to celebrate his return. The knowledge that Greta Platt no longer lies in consecrated ground. After receiving assurances from the Avedon family that they will wait until Aramis's return before using the King's Crown potion, Aramis encounters Head Constable Lewis. He takes Aramis down into the tunnels until they reach an alcove near the Hemmings' home. Once there, Lewis shows Aramis his discovery, Greta Platt's journal. Pages that might have helped identify Greta's killer are missing from the book. What is left, however, is a key that unlocks some of the coded entries in the Platt accounting books. The mundane power of knowledge has a seemingly arcane effect on Aramis, finally allowing him to make the connection between the glowing mineral found in the caves near Avedon Hill, events from Cairn's history, and the unexplained amount of gold that appears to be flowing into Avedon Hill. Aramis decides to share everything he knows with Constable Lewis. But before he can even begin, Richard Avedon arrives and ushers both Lewis and Greta's journal off to Avedon Manor, leaving Aramis with one less ally, but with a new plan as well.
And now, episode 37 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 37, The Hunter of Artus. The Icon of Artus, Child of War. The assassin stood behind Theroic, ready to strike. "Is your work complete, General?" Theroic glanced at his one remaining hunter, bound and gagged. "Our work will never be done. My life, however, is yours. Azteca Tylir, Reminders of Iberian."
When Aramis arrived at the inn less than a psych later, he found Aaron sitting in what had become their accustomed booth. Lila sat across from him, puffy eyes telling him all he needed to know. Both got to their feet as Aramis walked over to them. "Please, sit back down." Aramis approached Lila and took her right hand into his. "Everything is going to be fine, Lila."
"Sir Aramis, I realize that Talik might not have been the most honorable man, especially if he got himself killed dealing with bandits."
Aramis looked over to Aaron, who confirmed with a nod that this was the story being circulated.
"But he was like a da to me,"
Aaron interjected. "There is good news, though. Lord Avedon sent word that Lila is to take over the inn." Aramis smiled and used a finger to push strands of Lila's brown hair away from her face. "Well, now, that is good news."
"Talik didn't have a family. He kept saying that he was going to find a wife on his trips to the coast, but he never did. He only came back with ideas in his head. I've got two cousins that are of age. I know they're tired of working on the farms. I thought maybe I could bring them here. Let Red do more of the cooking around here if he likes."
Aramis nodded. "I am sure he would like that very much." He cast a glance over to Aaron. "Lila, I stopped by Red's home. He will not be coming in tonight. I hope you do not mind. In any case, Aaron and I will not require much in the way of service later today." A short time later, the two men sat in their room discussing what had happened since they had parted. "Yes, after speaking with Lewis, I felt we needed some leverage." "I hope he can handle it." Doubt tinged Aaron's voice. "He must. Now tell me about the rest of your morning." Aaron handed Aramis's drawing of Gloria's blood-stained carpet back to his mentor. "Father Livingstone believes he has seen this somewhere before, but he just couldn't place it. He suggested it might be part of something larger, because it means nothing on its own. He told me to say he was sorry, but he'll continue to mull over it."
Disappointing. I feel the same way about it. It is right there, just beyond my grasp."
Aramis stared at the drawing. Aramis had already shared what he had seen in Greta's journal. Aaron returned to that topic.
"Marissa is involved according to Greta's schedule book, correct? What if the doctor didn't feel compensated for her work over the years? But she and Alex were together the night Greta was murdered. What if they killed Greta together? We know there's magic involved here, but we also know that it took someone with more strength than Marissa to carry out these murders. We already know that Alex is unhappy with his place in Avedon Hill."
Aramis smiled at Aaron's logic.
"That is a good theory and one worthy of pursuit, my young prince."
He continued to stare at the drawing in an attempt to link it to any symbology he had studied during his life. Magic, religion, alchemy, prophecy, herbology. But it was as if the knowledge hid behind a door in his mind, laughing at him. You can tear down walls in others' minds, but you cannot access information that should be at your beck and call. Old man. What if the murderer wasn't a townsperson at all? Aramis looked up from his notebook. How so? We've been concentrating on everyone in town. Lane Nichols, Talik Boar, Edvard Avedon. But we now know that someone could have gotten in and out of town using the tunnels. Maybe this is more about someone with a grudge against the Platts that doesn't live in Avedon Hill. And the attack on you in our former lodgings. We were getting close, and the killer thought he might be able to scare us off? Aramis thought it over. Possibly, but only the townspeople knew about us and our investigation. Aaron's mind had moved on. You mentioned Jilly. Could she have been so angry at her father over his affair with Greta that Jilly took it out on her? I do not believe Jilly Hemming knew anything about the affair until I told her. And her reaction was anger, but not directed at her father. Her anger was with you. No, I believe her anger was at Greta. And while I believe Jilly Hemming could have killed Greta Platt, I do not believe she could have orchestrated the events that have taken place since our arrival. Aaron stood and began pacing. What if Father Joris has been right all along? What if Edvard killed Greta? What if Greta rose from her grave and has been wandering through the tunnels? What if it is Greta that attacked me the other night out of some sort of need to keep us quiet about Edvard? Or better yet, silence us before we discovered what the Platts and the Avedons have been doing for the last 400 years. But why would she kill her own mother? Aaron sat on the edge of the bathtub and sighed. I don't know. It was Aramis's turn to stand and pace. I do not know as well. And even though I do not believe that Greta walks as a vampire, the fact remains that her corpse is missing. It is time for me to ignore my intuition. Consider this possibility. And what about Father Joris? Aramis smiled, but didn't say a word. I saw Father Joris in my first dream walk. He cut off the head of Greta Platt's murderer. Since that moment, I haven't even considered the possibility that Joris is Greta's killer. Just remember that your dream walks can show you threads from the past and the future, but that you cannot tell what is truth and what is dream. So what do you believe? I believe that Father Joris believes he is right, to a fault. But killing innocent women over his belief in the dead rising around him does not make sense. Killing the innocent. Aramis's eyes moved to the drawing once more. Could it be that easy? The monk smacked the parchment with the back of his hand, producing a thwack that made Aaron jump. Come, Aaron. Where are we going? To the smithy.
Herr Jar, we need to speak to you.
Aramis called to the blacksmith through the heavy oak door that barred their way into the smithy.
This is important. Please, open the door.
From behind the door, Aramis and Aaron heard the voice of Alla Swank, Herjar's apprentice.
Herjar doesn't want to speak to you, Sir Aramis. He thinks you don't like him very much.
Tell Herjar I know he had nothing to do with any of the murders here in town. Alice, tell him I really need him.
A few moments later, Aramis heard the sound of someone removing the wood beam that barred entry to the smithy. It was Herjar that opened the door and walked out, repeating the mantra from the first time Aramis had met the half-orc.
I didn't do it.
He clenched a fist at his side, but his eyes were sad.
I know.
Then what do you want with me now?
Aramis held his version of Gloria's drawing in his left hand, but he did not show it to Herjar just yet.
You said you were originally from Inara.
Yes. My mother and I left Inara when I was 12.
You mentioned you lived in a clan. Which one?
Clan Mesian.
Aramis thought for a moment.
Western Inara. Clan Mesian belongs to the tribe Knock, does it not?
Yes. What does this have to do with anything, Sir Aramis?
Tell me if you recognize this.
Aramis handed his notebook to Herjar. The blacksmith studied the drawing for a moment before raising his eyes to the monk.
No, what is it?
Look at it again. Imagine that this is part of a larger picture.
Herjar studied the drawing once more. At first, there was nothing, but then, slowly, the blacksmith's eyes widened.
Let me get my inkwell.
Aramis handed his pen to Herjar, who gazed at it in amazement. Please, Herjar. Herjar shook his head and began drawing on the paper.
This what you're looking for, Sir Aramis?
Aramis nearly laughed as he took the parchment and pen back from Herjar.
You had it turned wrong.
Yes, that is it.
Aaron leaned in.
What is that?
Herjar spoke first.
Odinaran symbol for Arjun.
The blacksmith paused for a moment.
No, not Arjun.
Aramis finished his thought.
Of Artus.
Herjar nodded.
I'd bet you see that symbol in some of the etchings at the old Temple of Artus, if they hadn't all worn away.
Aaron spoke directly to Aramis.
Did you know that already? Inara, unless you limit your discussion to the larger cities such as Tanis or Lorinor, is still made up of tribes that are made up of even smaller clans. Most of these clans have moved away from the nomadic tendencies of their ancestors, living in towns and steads that run along the rivers connecting the Cornhold and Thessian mountain chains. All of these tribes trace their lineage back to an apical ancestor, some warrior or mother or shaman that founded the tribe. In many cases, the tribes believe these founders were avatars of one child of Aj or another.
Herjar had nodded his head as Aramis spoke.
Clan Mesian was directly descended from Eli. The one thing my mother always regretted was that she had to leave her stead. She always felt less connected to Eli living here in Grosh.
Aramis continued.
There are dozens of clans that claim Artus as their apical ancestor. But 2,000 years ago, when these tribes began appearing, there was no principle of inclusion. Artus was known as Wraith or Tywir.
Clan Mishian's founder was named Onimar.
Aramis looked up at Herjar.
Onimar, who drove the dragon from Mount Irakai and found the Horn of the Eye, giving Clan Mishian power over all their enemies.
Herjar smiled.
Yes.
Aaron had tired of the history lesson. He tapped the parchment with his index finger.
So what does this mean?
Aramis held up his left hand.
In a moment, young Aaron.
He turned back to the blacksmith.
One more question, Herjar. Have you ever done any work for Father Joris?
Yes, once. He had an old ring mail shirt. I repaired a few links on it and shined it up for him.
And that rod.
It was Alice, standing inside the smithy, peering around the door.
Yes, Joris brought in a rod once. It was ivory, had symbols carved into it from end to end, but none that I recognized.
Why did he bring the rod to you?
It has these silver bands, one on each end and another not quite halfway up the rod. I have a silver cleaner that he wanted to borrow. He didn't want to leave it with me.
Aramis held up the drawing once more.
Did any of the carvings on the rod look like this?
No, most of the carvings on the rod were decorative in design, but a few near the middle of the rod looked more important, religious maybe.
Alice called out once more.
Arcane, more like.
But nothing either of us knew, unless you recognized him, Olus.
Herjar looked back at the door. Alice shook his head from side to side, eyes wide, and then disappeared behind the door. A guttural noise escaped Herjar's mouth, his version of a laugh.
You need anything else, Sir Aramis? Olus may need some tending to. That's the most he spoke since I knowed him.
So are you going to tell me what in Aja's name is going on here?
Aramis and Aaron had left the smithy and were heading northwest.
I just accepted Father Joris' word that he had been an undead hunter for the Brotherhood of Arjun. That was foolish of me. Gloria obviously could not write out her murderer's name and blood. It would have been noticed and wiped clean. But drawing a symbol, or at least part of one, that she succeeded in doing. So I began thinking about all of the symbols associated with herbology, the arcane arts, even symbols used in the mercantile arena in case, as you suggested, it was Alex de Weren that had killed her. Nothing fit. But then I remembered the book you found in Gloria's office. The book with one of the various Anaran symbols of Dapin on the cover. The last time I spoke with Gloria, she realized that we had discovered the secret room connected to her office. She knew I understood something about Anaran symbology. While I do know many of the Anaran symbols for Dapin, there are many more symbols for Artus, as the Child of War is a very popular figure within Anaran barbarian tribes. Aramis pointed to the drawing, still in his hand. I knew I had seen this before, and when I remembered the icon for Dapin, I came to believe this was Anaran as well. But there are so many iconic symbols for Artus, I could not be sure. But then I remembered Herjar was from Anara, and that the blacksmith that had apprenticed Herjar was named Loxvenet, another Anaran name. Considering that most Anaran metalwork includes the etching of symbols and icons, I thought Herjar might be able to confirm my suspicions. Aaron noticed where they were heading. Father Joris. Aramis nodded. Remember that I said it would not make sense that Father Joris would murder innocent women. I said that based on the assumption that Father Joris was an undead hunter for the Brotherhood of Arjun. The Brotherhood of Arjun, even one of their undead hunters, would never intentionally harm someone, Aaron thought to himself. Arjun, the Child of Protection, but a hunter of Artus. I should have seen it. They continued on as the monk collected his thoughts. The hunters of Artus go back to the time of Theroic.
The possible avatar of Artus, the Child of War.
Right. During the War of Man, the demon and demon spawn of Outworld were turned back at the Battle at Ulm by forces led by Theroic, Iberian, and Queen Alicia Llewellyn. Following the War of Man, Theroic, some say in an attempt to flee from guilt over his part in the assassination of Iberian, personally led a small army north into what is now known as Anara in an attempt to eradicate any remaining Tarim presence in Cairn. Theroic drove his army, not caring about himself or anyone around him. After 3 years of searching through the worst environments of Cairn, the mountains of Anara, the deserts of Eastern Grosh, only a small, loyal band of men remained at Theroic's side. Some contend that it was at this point the warrior priests of Iberian, the Knights of the Rose, confronted Theroic and executed him for his part in the death of Iberian. The men that were left, the ones that followed Theroic until the end, these came to be known as the Hunters of Artus. The various priesthoods that developed after the death of Iberian, worshipping a single vision of the various incarnations of Artus, adopted the Hunters of Artus as their own. But the Hunters of Artus were never truly controlled by the organized bureaucracy that had welcomed them into the fold. They believed in one single vision. Theroic's vision. A Cairn that was undead free. The two men were quickly approaching Father Joris's home. His door stood open, swaying in the breeze. Aramis paused, compelled to finish his explanation. After the priest of Cairn successfully removed Artus as a recognized child of Aj, Hunters of Artus were officially disbanded, but some still live. And for these men, the war against the undead never ends. Aramis recalled one of the first things Father Joris had said to them.
Regrettable loss she was. Greta was a casualty of war that did not need to be. But there will be more losses here. Be sure of that, monk.
Aramis growled at his own failure to recognize the truth, assuming the rant of an aging undead hunter was only that and nothing more. Aaron followed with an insight of his own. H.A., the torn page from Greta's journal, that stood for Hunter of Artus, didn't it? Aramis nodded, too angry with himself to enjoy Aaron's realization. He shook the drawing that was now rolled up like a scroll in his hand. Gloria Platt knew what Joris was when he came to Avedon Hill and referred to him as H.A. Greta used these initials for him as well. And as Gloria died, she made sure we knew it, too.
Thank you. infected. Infected with a disease that thinks, a disease that talks, and as the victims finally succumbed, a disease that walks. One man fought back. He resisted the voices. Perry Dawsey carved out pieces of himself in a desperate attempt to survive. He won. But as Perry awakes in a government hospital, he realizes he can still hear those voices. It's not over. And now it's even worse, because the infection has become contagious. Contagious is the bloody sequel to Scott Sigler's horror thriller, Infected. Contagious is available in stores December 30th, or reserve your copy now at scottsigler.com/pre-order. Get the book the day it comes out, because if someone spoils the ending, you'll hate yourself enough to use the chicken scissors.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. This is a little bit different. I am recording in front of my computer, not in the studio. I'm going to listen to some Caroline calls and play a couple more promos, but let's get right to the calls. Here's Scott Roche.
Hi, PG. This is Scott Roche, author of the podcast novel Archangel, which can be found at archangelnovel.com. Damn. And I just wanted to say that as you're wrapping up Avedon Hill, that it's been a pleasure to help you out with co-production, and it's also been a pleasure as a fan to listen to what you've been doing. And I want to say personally that you seem to me to be the epitome of Southern gentility and humility. As you were giving props to my other boss, Mr. Lester, I couldn't help but think what a shame it was that Avedon Hill didn't make the cut award-wise. Ooh, you should excuse the expression. This past year. But, as always, there is next year, and I wish you luck there. And now that you and Chris are on the same page in iTunes, at least as of today, I thought it only appropriate to say that you guys are both on the same page in my book. And I look forward to a future where my projects are as well written and produced as yours and Chris's are. Perhaps when that fine day comes, you can accept an award for me too. See you around on Twitter. Cheers.
On the same page? Ugh. We must crush the Lester. I will be happy to accept an award for you. I seem to be pretty good at accepting awards for other people. And now we have a call from Mildred.
Hello, PGs. This is Mildred from Albany, and I'm not all the way caught up with Avedon Hill, but I felt that I needed to drop you a line and tell you how much I'm enjoying not only your writing, but all the wonderful voice talent that you have working with you. I'm looking forward to finding out more of what's going on, and see who exactly killed Greta. Thank you very much for all your work. Have a good day.
Hi, my name is John. Well, I tried to deny it for so long.
You love me?
When I first downloaded you into my computer, of course, I was listening to those other guys, you know, Sigler and the Seventh Son guy, and, you know, and I was saying, well, Murder at Avedon Hill, not really my style, you know, and I put it off and put it off, and I, like, ran out of stuff finally, and I said, well, let me finally check it out. And to my surprise, I mean, you know, like, it was really, really great. So once I, like, got all the way caught up, you know, I had like something like 30 episodes to get through, and I finally got through them, and it was like, man, you know, because I was like nonstop after that. I put everybody else to the curb. So then I finally said, okay, you know, this is a really good show. And then it became, you know, an obsession. You know, I kept looking for my blue dot, you know, in my iTunes to go like, oh, come on, you know, at least, come on, at least Murder on Avedon Hill, something download, you know. So it's like, now it's an obsession, you know. Damn you, Holyfield.
Ah, yes. Damn you, Holyfield.
I am going to leave an iTunes a review for you. It'll probably be under something like Captain Bly. But, that's cool. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, John, and when you do that, please send me an email so that I can get you entered into the contest. Next, we have a call from our friend, our good friend, Michael Spence.
Hi, PG, this is Michael Spence. I've been listening to Murder at Avenatt Hill during the wee hours of the night. So we're dealing with weapons-grade glow rocks, are we? My word, I'm impressed. Unfortunately, so far it looks like you've just disposed of my chief suspect for the, or at least you've cleared my chief suspect for the murder. But we'll see what happens. In the meantime, still I will keep listening and see what goes on from here. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, Michael, since we're playing this email, excuse me, this voicemail after episode 38, looks like we've at least given away who Aramis and Aaron think has committed the murders. So we'll just have to wait and see if that's, you know, the final revelation on who has committed these murders in Avedon Hill.
Hi, PG. This is Michael Spence again. Listen, I wanted to let you know, listening to the promo again, I've got to say, it really works. I figure I can say that since, at least I hope it works, and I hope it gets you a whole lot more listeners. I figure I can say it since, A, it was mostly written by Mark and T and Seth and all them, and B, I want to give so much of the credit to Patrick's voice. I've always liked the Schnockenacki's voice, and I think it works especially well here. Even though I understand you clobber him at golf regularly. Ah, well. That's it. Talk to you later.
Thank you, sir, for both of those calls. Yes, you were referring to Patrick McLean from the Schnockenacki podcast. If you missed the special episode called Flinchy and the Mexican Show Truck Part 1, that's the new audio drama, the comedy we're doing over at the Schnockenacki. And the subsequent episodes, at least 4 or 5 episodes, will be found over there. So please go register over at the Schnockenacki, subscribe over there, or I'll at least let you know on my site when they are available over there so you can go download them directly if you don't feel like subscribing. I'm going to go ahead and play a second promo for Flinchy and the Mexican Show Truck. And again, please go try it out. Well, that's about it. Just wanted to thank everyone that called in, everybody that has left reviews on iTunes. Please keep it up. That improves my position on iTunes when you do that for me. I'm hoping to get episode 38 out next week before Christmas. That's the goal. So hopefully you'll have another episode for your Christmas stocking. And I hope everyone has, or I wish everyone, a happy holiday season. And we will talk at you soon. Once again, thanks for listening.
So we're going to tell you the story.
And I'm here to make sure he tells you the truth.
Truth? Nobody wants the truth. They want a good story.
But this is non-fiction.
Okay, George Washington, take it away with the Truthliosity Parade.
What? Flinchy and the Mexican Show Truck. Listen now at theschnockenacki.com.
Okay, seriously, what kind of person names a podcast something that no one knows how to spell? Well, that would be me. So, the Schnockenacki. TheSeanachai.com.
In a world where nothing is as it seems, where dark and light clash in a struggle for power, where a young man strives to regain his locked and hidden past, comes a fantastic tale of heroes, love, mystery, and algebra? The House of Grey takes you on a journey through magic, mysticism, and mayhem as young Monson Grey discovers who he is, what his dark purpose might be, and what sinister secrets lay buried in his mind. Join Monson, Casey, and Artorias as they navigate the halls of the most prestigious high school in the country, all while peeling away the layers of Monson's shadowy past. Fantasy, friendship, and fate all await you in Colin Earl's podcast-only novel, The House of Grey. Subscribe today at House of Grey Book or patiobooks.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this podcast and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through magnatune.com, Kevin McLeod through incompetech.com, and David Beard through davidbeardmusic.com. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review at iTunes and on patiobooks.com, and become part of the show by leaving a message on the Karen line at 704-315-5884. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008, P.G. Holyfield, and is released under a Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, 3.5 U.S. license.
What?
No. Damn you, Holyfield.